Hello, and welcome to On the Line. The line between this world and the other side. I'm Carl Richterer. Sometimes the most frightening things come in pairs. Brad and Janet, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, Gomez and Morticia, the Grady twins in The Shining, and this episode's interviews. First, if you dare, you'll hear from Brett Morris, the maker of the most terrifying, ultra-realistic Halloween masks you'll ever see. Then, the Inspector's paranormal team will share their scariest stories and tell you what to do if you suspect you're haunted. So come inside, where it's nice and dark, and have the happiest of Halloweens. Brett Morris joins me from Baton Rouge. Hi, Brett. How are you?
Hey, Carl. I'm doing very well. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you.
Sure. I think this is going to be really interesting. You work for a company called Composite Effects, correct?
Yes. Otherwise known as CFX or Composite Effects.
Tell us what the company is and what you do there.
Well, I am the general manager there, and I wear a number of different hats beneath that umbrella of a title. But what we do is we're essentially a practical special effects company, but we specialize in a few different things. And primarily we run down three lanes of travel, which include prop making for the entertainment industry, TV and film, haunted houses, theme parks. Then we also do medical prototyping, which is something that we've really leaned heavily into in recent years, because we make some really interesting synthetic human tissue.
Interesting.
And so we apply that understanding of the materials we work with and apply it to helping develop and prototype different training models for different medical institutions. And then the third lane of travel, I guess, would be it would be the silicone mask making and props that we do for collectors and people that cosplay and things like that. A lot of that is also directed into the haunted house and theme park realm too.
Yeah, I'm going to put up a link so people can see what we're talking about with these masks. Mask is almost not even a great word for these. Can you just describe sort of what they are and how they're different from what someone might find at Walmart or Spirit Halloween?
Gladly. Yeah, so a lot of people are familiar when they hear mask or Halloween mask. You know, if I tell somebody I make Halloween masks, you know, that's kind of cool. You know, that's certainly a topic that entertains people when talking about. But we go a step further, and we don't use traditional latex, which is a material that starts to dry rot immediately. It breaks down, and it's very hot, and it has a static look to it. It doesn't move with the wearer. And we have developed and pretty much perfected working with medical grade silicones to create masks that fully encapsulate the wearer's head and arms. And so that mask then compresses around the wearer's bone structure, musculature, and it allows emotions to come through or be conveyed. You can speak naturally through them. Vision is fine, with some exceptions, depending on the nature of the monster that we are creating. But for the most part, they're very comfortable, and they move with you. So just being able to emote is something that really stands out to people. And the fact that they feel so real, the paintwork on them is very natural looking. And so when someone sees it up close or touches it for the first time, they're kind of unsettled
Yeah, I was about to use the word uncanny. It's just like they're so realistic. It's amazing. How did you get into this line of work?
Well, we can go way back in time. When I got into this job, it was about 12 years ago. But my interest in monsters in general started in when I was around 5, around 1980, when I saw the movie Alien for the first time. That was eye opening, life changing for me, as far as what I didn't know what a movie could do to you. And I wasn't supposed to watch that movie. My cousins put it on while they were babysitting me, and my parents were none too happy about that. But yeah, it was amazing. I loved being terrified as I was, and it didn't stop after that. I was watching Jaws, and then there was Poltergeist, and in the 80s were just, I was surrounded by all these amazing movies that utilized special effects or mask and puppetry, things like that. One example I think of instantly is The Dark Crystal. That was all puppets, but that was just fascinating fantasy to see unfold into a child like myself at the time. It was just otherworldly, to the point that it became ingrained in me to always be fascinated with it. And I know around the time I was 11, I was making my own Freddy Krueger gloves. But my parents were real supportive of things, and if they didn't have any idea that I would ever have the opportunity or get interested as an adult in doing this or finding a path within it. But I did when I graduated college, I graduated in graphic design, so I always had some an artistic side or mm-hmm. creative side, and I did freelance graphic design. But while I was doing that, I had to have a career path, and I started with casualty adjusting, and I did that for a few years, and that wasn't a good, that didn't fit with me from the creative side. And I ended up going into retail, and I spent years in retail, and that was kind of a lather, rinse, repeat type of thing, where once you knew the ins and outs, it could be profitable and pretty much like clockwork. It was just an everyday just go grind type of gig. Yeah. But it didn't satisfy the creative side of me. And then around the, I guess, 2010-ish days, we started getting some film work. We got tax credits were offered to the film industry to come down and make films down here.
In Louisiana, you mean?
In Louisiana, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so when that was taking place, I was just kind of tilted my head a little bit. I said, I'm just going to observe this for a little bit. But we still haven't answered your question, but I'm on the path.
So no, that's okay.
I'm on the path. So I used to do, I still do Halloween in the French Quarter in New Orleans is incredible. I recommend it to anybody that wants to just experience a fantastic Halloween where everyone just really goes all out. And you can really see some amazing costumes and whatnot. And, if you go into the more local areas and not the touristy areas, it can be more fun and less touristy. But people really go all out. So that fascinated me and was a lot of fun. So I back in 2000, I had a full set of stormtrooper armor from Star Wars. And it was legit and all handmade and had it voice amped. So I sounded like them. I had prop gun made from molds from the movie. And so I did that for years. And then around 2007, I started to, things were getting worn down, and I said, I'm going to create a new character. So let me look into getting into this character and what this will be. And so I was just doing some Googling. I said, I want to see what the latest in special effects stuff is. And I found the Composite Effects website. And they, at that time, they'd only been in business since 2006. So they only had, I think, half a dozen characters in silicone masks, but I'd never seen silicone masks before. And they're the innovator. So I was just mesmerized by it. I started looking further into it. I said, okay, I'm getting that mask. That's my next purchase. And I would go to that website every week just to read and learn more about silicone masks. And it was one day at work, a gentleman came into the store I was working at the time, and he was wearing a CFX shirt. In Louisiana, I always thought it, I just assumed this was out of L.A.
Right, Los Angeles, right.
Because L.A. on the website meant Louisiana, but I just took it as Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So I said, hey, I feel like I might be one of the few people that even knows what this business is. What do you know about composite effects? Do you have a mask? And he said, well, I'm the owner.
Oh, wow.
Belial the Demon in metallic green is going to be my next purchase, and it's with y'all. And can I pick your brain for 30 minutes if you have some time? So I talked to Ken Decker, that's the owner's name, and I talked to him at length and was just so excited. And he invited me to take a tour of the shop at the time, which was much smaller than we are now. Mm-hmm. And I took him up on that instantly, and I went with a pen and paper in hand. I said, I want to know how to do this. This excites me to no end. And he had already outlined that they were working within the film industry down here too, with the tax credits happening, and they were doing primarily prop work, but he had jumped into this silicone mask making to help with the haunted house industry because people sit in chairs doing makeup for hours. And this is much quicker. And the realism of the masks, sell the looks, while saving time. So, it's a boon for the haunted house industry to use these. At any rate, I went there with a pen and paper in hand, and I said, if I wanted to demonstrate to you what, you know, my level of interest or commitment to wanting to do this, knowing that I have zero experience with it, what would you recommend I do? And he just spouted off and all these materials and videos and equipment, things that I just wrote it all down. And then I went home and I chewed on that for a little bit, for a couple of weeks. And I just started researching everything that was on that piece of paper. And after that, about a week after that, I sold my truck so I could buy everything on that paper. And then I converted the front bedroom of my house into a workspace to just focus on learning. And so I would make my own masks, starting with latex, because the silicone process is so expensive and specialized that a lot of those, the processes were proprietary early in the day back then. Mm-hmm. And so I was just focusing on learning sculpting. I'd never sculpted before that, and trying my hand at a few different things, mold making, all kinds of different various elements that comprise the effects gig, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so I would stay in touch with him, and I would go to that shop, and I would just show him my progress, and I would send emails and updates and just check in from time to time. And I did that for 2 years while still doing the retail gig. And I got an email one day. He said, I've got a spot for you. It's the worst job in the shop, and it's minimum wage. Do you want it? And I knew that would be my foot in the door. And I had savings and some things, you know, that I needed to do some math with. And I said, okay, let's break it all down. If I can spend 1 year here and still maintain my standard of living, it'll be worth it for the experience, A, and B, it'll also let me know if I know soon enough, I'm going to climb that ladder. I'm going to learn everything I can over there.
Right.
And within 3 months of doing the grunt work, I was still doing grunt work past the 3 months, but at 3 months in, they started letting me do some sculpting. So I did a few of those. And then 9 months in, I was promoted to head lead sculptor. And I wasn't the only person sculpting. There were a couple other sculptors there. And I was getting some training from them as well, because my sculpting wasn't fantastic by any stretch. Mm-hmm. But it was enough that they saw something within it that could be improved upon or taught. So that's how I got into it. And I've been there ever since. And then I sculpted full time over there for 2 years, making dozens of characters and masks. And we started growing. And like I said, we dipped our toe in the medical waters to see if there was anywhere to play within that field. And sure enough, there was. And then we started taking on more of that. And we didn't have a GM. We were smaller business, it was maybe eight of us over there, 8 to 10. And then started growing, and this position came available, but it still afforded me the option to still play in the clay, so to speak. So I could still oversee things and expand our reach in the medical field, but still make some time to devote to sculpting characters and creatures, just not as many. Mm-hmm. But that still scratched the itch that I had with the design and sculptural side of things.
So what's the process like? Do you start with clay, I guess?
Yes. So that, and I'm sure we'll get into some of the evolution of our processes here in a bit, but how it was primarily then was you have to have a sculpting armature, which is essentially like a mannequin head from the shoulders up. That's something that has to be shaped in such a way that when it's sculpted, when the mask is sculpted on it, it's going to allow the finished product to compress around the wearer's head. So, because you wouldn't want to sculpt on a one-to-one ratioed core or armature, because then the mask would just set on the on the wearer's head.
Okay, I see what you mean.
You need it to compress. So you have to reduce it in all these specific areas to different tolerances, and all of that had never been figured out before. So we went through four different core iterations before we got it fine-tuned to the most standardized, one-size-fits-most type of core. But that said, we take the armature and then we load it up with what's called monster clay. We use monster clay. It's a paraffin-based, wax-based clay. There are other clays similar. Chavant is one manufacturer. There's another clay that I just started experimenting with recently called Alien Clay. It's pretty nice too. But we use these wax-based clays because they don't dry out. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to work on something and get pulled to another project, and you don't want, if it's water-based, it's just going to dry out, or you have to keep it wet, and it's a mess. Plus, once you mold a water-based clay, it wears out. I mean, the clay is lost. It can't be reused. This right. wax-based clay, we can reuse over and over and over, and that's big with us. That saves a lot of money, not having to constantly be buying the clay. So you load it up with clay. Usually have a few concept ideas or artwork in hand that we're talking about doing, or we kind of by committee decide on pursuing. And, I'll use those reference images and just start sculpting. I've got a tackle box that's just loaded with all of my different tools. And sometimes you make tools because you don't have a tool that does what you want it to do with the clay, or you make right. textured stamps. Yes. Yeah, so everything, I start seeing the world differently now and say, oh, can I use that as a tool? Is that a tool? So once it's sculpted in the clay, then we mold it and we use fiberglass and epoxy for that process. And that takes several days. These are very robust, rigid molds that, they have to withstand a lot of force in the demolding process, and they have to last for years and years and years. So we build them, and it takes about 3 days per mold, sometimes longer depending on the complexity of the mold. Mm-hmm. Once that's molded, we peel all that clay out and then bag it up and weigh it, because the weight is very similar to what the silicone weighs. And that way it tells us how much volume to mix with the silicone for our first test casting.
Okay.
Yeah, so then we mix up our rubber. We use a medical grade silicone by Smooth-On, called EcoFlex 30 in most cases. And we inject that rubber. We vacuum the rubber so that it eliminates all possible air bubbles. Mm-hmm. And then we inject it, and we get a casting that is free of bubbles and looks great. Now, there are occasional bubbles on the inside, but once we demold it and take it off the core, we turn it inside out and we patch any of the bubbles. That's one of the benefits of silicone too, is it bonds to itself. So we can hide seams where the mold parting line is. We can cut that down and then fill it with silicone and blend it with essentially lighter fluid to thin it out. And then that makes it seamless. So it looks like it just looks pretty perfect.
Now, what color is it at this point?
It depends on if we usually, before we'll do the first casting, we'll already have three standard options that we'll want to make available for the website.
Okay.
So we create three standards for every character, and we've already worked out those color schemes in advance of the the molding. So we just pick one of those three. We've got a recipe. We mix all of our pigments in-house we mix all of our colors and recipes. We do have pigments custom made by a company called GSDI, but we do all of the paint has to be made in-house. So we make all of our paint for every color that goes on a mask. That's paint made every time for that specific application, because you have, like I said earlier, you can only bond silicone to silicone. So that means your paint has to be silicone based. That means we have to mix every time, and you only have 10 to 15 minutes before the reaction takes place where the rubber starts to cure. So you have to move quick, and sometimes you have to mix multiple batches of the same color. But anyway, we would determine a base tone mm-hmm. that's going to be best suited for the layers of color that we're going to stack on it to bring it to life. So we'll just cast that base tone, and then we'll get that to our paint department, and they go to town. And that, let me tell you, they do fantastic work. Everybody in the shop is incredible. We are all talented in very different ways, but the skills involved, it's every step of the process is handled by someone else or someone different. Mm-hmm. So it's not as though one person gets a mold and then makes a mask start to finish. No, it's casting, demolding, then it goes to the finishing and paint work. Then sometimes it gets hair. So if we need realistic eyebrows or mustaches or even sparse hair on an elderly person, all of that gets hand punched. So we have hair artists that do that.
Oh, wow.
And style it. Mm-hmm. And then it gets coated so that we seal all of the paintwork onto the mask. So it's quite a process. It takes a while. Everything is done by hand. That was leading up until about 2020. Mm-hmm. COVID hit, and then the film industry had already been swayed to go to Atlanta. So we had closed that lane of travel, and then we were focusing heavily on the medical and the mask side of things. But we also started looking at updating our technology in the shop. You know, we do trade shows year round all over the country. And we had seen this amazing robot in Orlando, Florida, that's used in helping carve out set pieces for Blaine Kern in New Orleans for their Mardi Gras floats. Mm. They use it for carving out set pieces for theme parks. And we said, I wonder if we can apply this to what we do. And so now we've kind of gotten the hang of it in over the past year, and we are implementing this 7-axis CNC carver, where we do digital modeling of these characters now. Mm-hmm. And then we transpose those models into our robot, and we will have the core laid up with clay, and it rotates as it's carving 90% of the workout. And then we finish them by hand. And this allows us to turn around many more while still maintaining the looks that we would achieve with the hand sculpting.
That's interesting. I was going to ask if you use any 3D printing. I guess this is sort of a different process.
But we do use 3D printing. I do that for smaller pieces or things that I need molds of, say like horns, because if something's got big horns, you can't cast all of that together. We like to make horns sometimes out of a lighter weight foam and resin, and so they have to be added on. And in a lot of cases, a horn is a shape that wouldn't allow you to even be able to remove the mold or open the mold. So because of all of the shape or twists, turns, undercuts, and things like that. But so I'll 3D print a lot of things that will mold and that will be add-on pieces to the finished masks. We've got a 3D scanner. So if we need to take something that already exists and replicate it in the 3D world, we've got a 3D scanner for that, which is a handheld device that just zaps light at the surface of whatever the target is that you want to copy in the 3D world. Mm-hmm. And we'll use that, modify that as needed digitally. So we try to stay somewhat advanced or at least on aware of what's new and what's trending within the industry.
Do you have any insight into what scares people? What makes for a really scary mask or prop?
Oh, let's see. Oh, it varies. So you know, most people are terrified by things that are wet and slimy looking. They're your traditional monsters too, like vampire bats or werewolves or even zombies. I think back to Leatherface. I mean, part of that is he's got a chainsaw, so that's it's easy to get scared with that guy. But we just made a mask. Have you heard of trypophobia? Where it's a,
yeah, I was about to bring that up because I saw what you're talking about.
So we did that mask, and everyone loves it, but is too scared to get it, too grossed out by it. So
we should explain to people. There's this condition. It's not really a bona fide psychological condition that's diagnosable, but people get creeped out when they see a like irregular holes in something. And you have this one mask that's what the creature's eyes are, basically. And the top of the face is all these holes.
Mm-hmm. And then that hides the wearer's eyes, and just all you can focus in are those holes as someone that's a bystander. And it's just, it really is unnerving up close. But, you know, everybody's different. Mm-hmm. You know, pumpkins scare people, some people, and pumpkins don't scare other people. It's really, I think, the actor in these environments or scenes that are created within those haunted houses. But they really bring them to life and make them scary. So they could take something that would otherwise be kind of plain or boring, maybe, mm-hmm. like, let's say, a statue face. We do a couple of statues. Uh-huh. They can make them very unnerving just in the way that they bring the character to life. So
and some that you have are not really monstrous. They're just sort of like older people. Just sort of normal humans.
And yes, we have a natural human line, and a lot of people use those for YouTube videos or pranks. Like, they will dress as an old person or an elderly person and go ride a BMX bike, you know, in a half pipe or something, or you know, yeah. They'll do something that no one would expect an old person to be doing, and they'll act the part like they're old up until they want to do what it is that they're going to do that is very youthful and spry.
Yeah.
We've also had people use them for nefarious purposes. In fact, Playboy magazine had an article on us back. Oh, this is probably 8, 9, or 10 years ago. There in New York City, there was a bank heist for $200,000 with 3 people that used our masks to hide their appearance. Wow. And they got away with it. And the police weren't even looking for anybody wearing masks. No one in the facility that they robbed, or the bank that they robbed, even brought that up.
They didn't realize they were wearing masks.
Right. And that's how form-fitting these things are. They are a second skin. Just think Mission Impossible.
Right.
But then 6 months later, the lead detective on that case had called us and said, hey, we got a tip that these might be movie-grade masks. Can you watch a video? So we all sat and watched the surveillance footage, and we said, oh my God, that's ours. And so
were you able to help them? What
someone's intended use is, we don't make them for that purpose, I assure you, but it was wild to see that. And they caught the guys. We found the clients. They had even emailed us a week after that robbery, and all the email said was, your masks are outstanding. They work really well. And that was it.
Wow.
And now all 3 of those guys are each serving 20-year sentences.
Dang.
In prison. But
you've created a monster, so to speak.
Well.
Do you have a favorite of any of those that you've created?
Let me tell you. I do. I have a couple, but Dracul the Vampire is one of my favorites, because that's one where I got to just kind of tackle out of my head. We didn't have a concept in mind. We just said vampire bat, and then I just kind of reformed that one, and I was real happy with how that turned out. So that's a favorite. We've had licensing through the years with different entities like Marvel Studios, NBC Universal, and HBO. Trauma Studios, but HBO contacted us after the first season of Game of Thrones had come out, and they asked us if we would be interested in making White Walkers. And we were very excited about that, definitely on board with it. And it was going to be used for their global marketing. So every season that these weren't going to be used in the shows, but they were every year in Brazil and China and Europe, London, every new season would launch and they would put armies. They wanted to put armies of White Walkers in the town squares and just walking around on horseback and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
So we were on board with that. I liked that because I got to work on those. They would send me photos from the sets of the guys, the actors in the makeup chairs. And that was just, I loved the heck out of that.
Yeah. So I can imagine
getting to do that and work on the global marketing version of the Night King was fun for me. So that, as a, you know, from a personal standpoint, those, the Dracula and the Night King, I think are probably my favorite that I've worked on, but we've got over the years, we've had so many different sculptors and I can't hold a candle to some of the sculptors that we have had. And there are other masks like the Dread Knight is one that we have, which is just a fantastic interpretation of an undead medieval soldier. And it's incredible. Noah Flint sculpted that and it's outstanding.
So we're talking on October 1st. I had to get a hold of you before you got really busy for Halloween. What is the Halloween season like for you guys?
Well, it's actually busy now since these are made to order. Our Halloween business kicks into high gear starting in August.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so most everyone that is familiar with the silicone masks, and it's outlined on our site too for anybody that's new or interested in looking to get one. The production time takes about 6 weeks.
Okay.
For a standard mask, 4 to 6 weeks for a standard mask. So people know that as we get closer to October, that the availability to get it any sooner than that is limited.
Right.
So people like to, and most of the people that are spending, you know, these aren't cheap masks, you know, they run around $625 on up.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how elaborate they are and how they function. But most people over the years, we've kind of got our own following and people that change characters every year. And they've already got on November 1st, they've already started. They're going to start work on their next year's character. And so they know to get all their ordering done in advance. We do a trade show in St. Louis called Transworld Haunt and Attractions. And it is a trade show for all of the owners of haunted houses, and they come from all over the world, and it's done in March so that they can get their orders in and we can have all of the orders from March done by July. And that way they can start incorporating everything into their new scenes or sets that they're building.
Right. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your Halloween costume going to be this year?
Bubos La Peste.
What?
Nola Rat. The Nola Rat. I'm going to be a rat.
Okay.
And I've got with these glowing eyes. Just think of a nutria rat that's got mange and, albino pasty skin. And I've got this, I'm wearing an exterminator outfit and I'm exterminating the humans in the French Quarter by spraying. I'll fill it with water, maybe liquor. Who knows? No, we'll stick with water, but I can squirt, you know. I have a backpack that's going to be a sprayer, like that's used typically for farming or whatever, but it's all going to be weathered, distressed and gross. And I'm going to go around and, I go with friends and they're going to each have their own things, but I'm going to be Bubos La Peste, the Nola Rat.
Nice. Well, be sure and send me a photo.
Okay. Will do.
Thanks so much for taking a little time to talk to me today. It's been really interesting. I think, a lot of people just don't know how much work goes into these things.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity to chat it up, Carl. I would love to share at least our website. I know I'm sure you'll post it too, but
sure.
If people want to see them directly, you can go to cfxmasks.com or composite-effects.com. Each of those addresses will take you to the same place. And we've got videos, movement videos. So any character that someone is going to consider or wants to see in action, we've got video of it in action.
Great.
We've got a fantastic gallery of customer photos and people, if they have issues thinking of how they would costume a mask, the gallery is the place to see
cool.
all of that for inspiration.
All right. I'll definitely put some links in the show notes. So go check it out. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you.
Hey everyone, I want you to know how proud I am to welcome Hostetler Roofing as a sponsorship partner. I had the pleasure to meet with some of Hostetler's staff, and I could tell they really mean it when they say they're all about honesty, integrity, and accountability. They get it that contractors don't have the best reputation, and they want to change people's minds about that by setting an example. Everything Hostetler Roofing does is about taking care of customers. Whether it's a commercial or residential job, maintenance, repair, or a whole new roof. That's why they offer 5- and 10-year workmanship warranties on everything they do. Hostetler has a huge variety of roofing styles and materials available, and they're happy to help you with options to pay for their work, from affordable financing to applying for government grants. It all starts with a free inspection. Just call and ask, and before you know it, you'll get the best advice out there about your roof. Visit HostetlerRoofing.com or call 870-557-4797 to get started. And please mention you heard about them here. Welcome to the studio, Inspectors Paranormal Team. Can you please introduce yourselves?
My name is Crystal Neal.
Hi, I'm Melissa Estes.
Hello, my name's Nikki Clark.
Okay, so tell me what you guys do.
Okay, it's pretty simple. We like to investigate. We try to find the backstories to the paranormal, things that happen that you can't explain. And so we will investigate different places. We've investigated homes. We've investigated old houses, old buildings. Pretty much anywhere we've gone, we like to investigate it. Mm-hmm. And 9 times out of 10, we end up coming out with some kind of evidence.
Now, do people call you and say something weird's going on?
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We've had that happen.
Absolutely.
Oh, and what happens the rest of the time? You just pick a place?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you know, we might see something that pops up on Facebook and it's like, whoa, this looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think it's time to go investigate.
Hey, I saw this one, I think it's in Tennessee, and they were advertising if you could stay the night, they'd pay you like $20,000.
Oh, wow.
And thought, we got to go.
We could totally do that.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
But what's that story, Haunting of Hill House, where they do that? So tell me some of the places you've investigated around here.
Okay, around here. Well,
in Texarkana, or
Well, just in the region.
Well, yeah. Washington.
Okay,
it's very haunted there.
Yeah, in case people don't know, it's a state park where they have historical reenactments of old buildings and so forth.
We say what's the name of the school?
The 1914 Old Schoolhouse.
Yes,
we've been there many times,
and it has a lot of activity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now what do you mean when you say activity?
Well, everything from voices to
footsteps.
I actually saw it wasn't actually at the school. We take a tour also down to the cemetery.
Okay.
And on the way there was a house, and
We took pictures, and a lot of times the visions come out in the pictures, and you can't actually see them, but you can see them in your pictures and your mm-hmm. photos. And sometimes we get things like that. And I saw a woman, I mean, a little boy. At that time, it was a little boy in the window.
Mm.
And I got freaked out over that. And they can tell you lots of things.
Now, do these things look like movie ghosts, like white and transparent, or do they look like regular people?
I'm going to tell you, I saw something really weird at the Pioneer mm-hmm. Cemetery there at Old mm-hmm. Washington. And it was really late at night, and I just kind of saw something move just out of the corner of my eye, and it was, like, light-colored.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, that must be a deer. You know, it was something, you know, like an animal or something. And I kept watching, and I saw it again. I'm like, that is not a deer. And it was just like a misty-looking thing. And we were using an app where, you know, you can ask a question and then get an answer. And when they were talking about the little girl in white there at the cemetery, and I think her name was Sarah. And I said, okay, is Sarah what I'm seeing? And the thing said, Sarah is moving.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And that's what she was doing.
And that is when we got in the car and left.
But we use a lot of different equipment, too. But probably the most successful thing that you can use is your phone through taking video.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick up EVPs mm-hmm. where you don't hear anything with your ears, but when you listen back to it,
mm-hmm.
We've gotten some pretty good EVPs at a lot of places.
What does that stand for?
Electronic voice phenomenon.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so it just picks up things that you don't hear with just your regular ears.
Interesting. Yeah. Is there any specialized equipment that you use? I mean, you brought some gadgets in here today.
Yeah, we've got some gadgets. What I've got set up over there is the REM pod, and usually if the REM pod goes off,
mm-hmm.
pretty much there's something going on because it rarely will sound.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything gets close to it, it's electromagnetic.
Okay.
So that's why you have to be careful where you put it. You don't want to put it by anything electrical. But if it does make a noise, it's pretty much something's near it.
Mm-hmm.
We have
flashlight.
Oh, the flashlight. That's Nikki's favorite.
I love the flashlight.
Something so simple. You know, we set it up.
You mean a literal flashlight?
A flashlight.
Yes.
Just a flashlight.
And you set it up to where it's one of the mag lights, you mm-hmm. know, where you just twist it.
Right.
And you kind of loosen it up a little. And so a lot of information that we find out, we use the flashlight for like yes or no questions.
Okay.
And so it'll turn on, you know, if we say, okay, if, you know, someone is here with us, could you turn the flashlight on? Mm-hmm. You know, just go and touch it or the light, because, you know, you never know. They might not even know what a flashlight is. But,
right.
And so many times it comes on, and then we say, okay, can you turn it off so we can ask you another question? And, you know, you can see it kind of going and going, and then it turns off. And so it's just a simple tool that, you know, anybody could actually use.
It responds well, though, and it responds to your voice, like when you ask it a direct question.
Interesting.
So you can say, is this a man? And if it is, will you turn the light on?
Mm-hmm.
And if it is a man, the light will come on. And if you ask it to turn it off, it will turn it off. So it's actually, that's what I like about it, because it responds to the questions.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and even with like the REM pod or other types of light or noise-making equipment, we try to get it to respond to what we're saying. We don't just say, oh, it's lighting up. Okay, that must mean something.
Right.
Well, we still try to get it to interact to prove that it's actually something that is communicating with us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever use any sort of traditional methods, like a Ouija board or anything like that? No, you're making faces.
No.
They don't.
Yeah.
We don't use that. You have to be careful. You don't want to just try to call up any thing, you know. And so usually what we try to communicate with is maybe someone who's already there at that location. Mm-hmm. And it could be, you know, we believe that spirit can attach to antiques. It could be like, for example, one, you know, you ask if anybody ever calls us up and asks us to come out. We had a local business owner. She was having some issues at her house in mm-hmm. Redwater, and she wanted us to come out. And she their house wasn't that old. Like, I want to say it was 3 or 4 years mm-hmm. old. Mm. But the property that the house was on, there used to be a plantation there.
Oh.
And so it could be something that's attached to the land. You know, it can be anything. So anywhere we go, whether it's new property, old property, you know, we keep our minds open because, you know, we feel spirit is everywhere.
Yeah. What do you think ghosts are? You know, what are we talking about here?
And I honestly, the word ghost, you know, it's...
yeah, I noticed you were saying spirit.
Yeah, because, you know, ooh, a ghost, ooh, you know. Yeah. But we feel that it's somebody that used to be alive, mm-hmm. you know. We're all Christians here, mm-hmm. and we believe that the body has a soul.
Mm-hmm.
And so once the body is gone, you know, the soul is still present. Now, where the soul goes, you know, can it come and go from wherever? You know, there's a lot of answers we don't have.
Right,
we don't
right.
know. But I was raised being told that if there are spirits around, they're probably evil.
Hmm.
And through my experience from the time I was a child, of course, when I was a child, I was like, and I experienced things, I was like, oh, my gosh, it's evil. It's bad, I'm, you know. But looking back now, I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that at all.
A lot of them are just really nice people.
Yeah.
But we go into this to try to debunk the situation, like mm-hmm. actually to prove to them it's nothing going on.
Right.
Yeah, so, we can be very skeptical.
We've found things where it wasn't. It was just like something in the air conditioning yeah. unit or something making a little clicking noise right. or something, and it wasn't mm-hmm. anything.
So you try to prove yourself or prove someone wrong.
That, yeah, because yeah. some people yeah, are really scared. I mean, they're afraid, and
yeah.
they want to find out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just a harmless... It's harmless, and yeah. their dog is acting silly or crazy, mm-hmm. and the dog is, because animals apparently are very sensitive
yeah.
to mm-hmm. odd things that are going on.
I remember a story someone told about how they felt like there were ghosts in their house, and it turned out they had a carbon monoxide leak.
yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've heard sometimes. That before. It makes you kind of
yeah.
feel like you're hallucinating or whatever.
Right.
Absolutely.
What's the scariest thing you've ever encountered?
Okay.
Let's get to it. It's Halloween time.
So we were at the Haunted Hill House in Mineral Wells, Texas.
Okay.
And it is a crazy, scary place to be. I mean, you just walk in and it just feels bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was the middle of the night. And we didn't know that this had happened until, like, the next day. Because the owner videos everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a couple of people in one room, and then I was in another room with dolls hanging from the ceiling, which creeps me out. Like, you just don't even know.
Well, that would scare anybody.
Yeah, so bad. It was bad. And Melissa was in the other room. And the next day, the owner, his name is Sonny, and he said, you have to watch this. And it was a video, and there was something trying to crawl into bed with them. You can see the blanket, like,
movement. I have the video if you want to watch
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's really crazy.
Yeah, it sounds like that movie Paranormal.
And, and that was pretty crazy. That was pretty crazy.
We've been at that place a couple of times. The first time we went, we had no clue what we were getting into, and we were there a couple of nights the first time. And we don't really feel comfortable at that place. No. We're not trying to find anything negative. We would prefer not to.
Right.
So that place is, it's pretty, it's got some negative energy there. Some bad things have happened there.
Yeah.
Jefferson, Texas is a pretty big place for us, too. Another kind of crazy story.
Yeah.
We were staying in the loft above McGarity's saloon there, and they have an open staircase, like you can just fall.
Oh, wow.
And they had a baby gate at the top, and it was somebody's birthday, and we tied a balloon to the baby gate just kind of to remind ourselves, like, don't fall down the stairs.
Right.
And it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and we start hearing footsteps. And, I mean, they are loud, and they are coming up the stairs, and we're thinking, okay, we're all about to die. Like, somebody's
coming to get us. We were expecting to see somebody,
The place is on fire, you know. And when the steps, when the sound got to the top of the stairs, there was nobody. Mm. And the baby gate rattled, and the balloon let go and floated to the ceiling.
Yeah.
That's creepy, all right. Yeah.
That's the same place where I got an EVP calling my name out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, what other sorts of things do you hear in EVPs?
You can a lot of names. They'll tell you names.
And, laughing. And, yeah. Singing. Mm. Music.
I've got one that's, I call The Grudge.
Oh, yeah, after the movie?
Yeah, and it literally, two people are talking, and they're kind of trying to get some interaction, I think, with the flashlight or one of our equipment pieces, and it's obvious that they don't hear this noise, you know, but it picked up later when we listened back to it, and it just is this horrible, creepy sound. I mean, I can let you listen to it. It's on my phone, but it's just a really creepy sound.
Wow. One of my experiences was here locally. I worked for SWAC over here, and I worked on 7th floor, and you know, it used to be St. Michael's Hospital,
right?
And 7th floor was it was a floor where, you know, a lot of people died there. And I had some scary experiences there.
Yeah.
Sometimes you smell weird things.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Like, you just get the scent, like, of a cigar or something. Mm-hmm. And, like, where did it come from?
Or
perfume. Sometimes a strong smell.
It'll just come and go real quick.
And the elevator there would just open by itself all the time. And the prisoners that worked there would tell me, I mean, that were there, and that also some of them were on a work, they worked outside of the prison.
Right.
And they would tell me all the experiences they had there. But I was always very, very uncomfortable on that floor.
Well, you know, it usually, you know, places that where there's a lot of energy, a lot of things that have happened, you know, and of course schools, you know, lots of things happen at schools, and, you know, sometimes there's negative things that happen at schools. But, we've investigated a couple of schools as well, and we have
phones going off.
Lots of
just
and
out
even
of the blue.
You talk to the custodians, they'll tell you. They're like, oh, yeah, we hear this, we saw that, you know, there's all, because they're there when other people are not there at night, and they get kind of creeped out too. But probably one of the most interesting places that I've gone to that I would love to go back to is in Kentucky. It's called Waverly Hills. And that place was actually where I got touched. I've been touched a couple of times.
Oh,
but,
really? Like you feel something.
You feel
touching.
It physically. When it happens, it's like it doesn't dawn on you necessarily, but then you start thinking, well, what could that have been? But at Waverly, you know, that used to be a place where tuberculosis patients would go. And they have the body chute where they have like this 500-foot ramp where they would take those who had passed away down the ramp to take them away so that patients wouldn't see, you know, the people. And so when you go to Waverly Hills and, you know, all the lights are out because there's no electricity in there, and it's just really dark. And so we were there two nights in a row. The first night, there were hardly anybody there. So we had, there were four of us, we had pretty much the whole, there were several stories. We were like by ourselves on one story. But when we were at the body shoot, as I was coming up to the top, I felt like something just kind of ran down my arm, you know, like somebody would just touch it and kind of do that. And I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe it was just, I don't know, spider web, you know, something. I was trying to explain it away. But the next night, we were in the same area, but there was a lot more people because there were some TV personalities there. Ghost hunters there. And as I was coming up, a woman was standing at the top where I had been when I had gotten touched, and she looked over at the guy that was with her, and she said, something just touched my arm. And it was like the very same place that I had been touched the night before on the arm standing right there. So I was like, that's just too coincidental. That had to be something. But
do you encounter that a lot? I, you know, I hear stories where someone will see something and think they're the only one, then they mention it, and someone else will say, yeah, I saw the same thing.
Yes. Okay, so I've stayed at the Crescent Hotel many times, and I went one year with my family, and when we were down in the morgue area, we'd just finished the tour.
Where is this, in New Orleans?
In Eureka Springs.
Eureka Springs, okay.
Yes. And, you know, it's got a lot of history, too. A lot of people died there, but as I was coming up from there, you know, I felt like something had touched the top of my head, and I'm thinking, okay, maybe a fly landed on me or something, you know, how, you know, tickles your hair. And I said something, and then my daughter was like, oh, I felt that same place right there when we were in the morgue. And then my aunt says the same thing. And I'm like, okay, somebody's, you know, going around playing duck, duck, goose or something.
There's a barber ghost.
Yeah, it was just like they're just kind of messing with you. And sometimes they will. They'll just kind of play tricks on you and stuff. Now, they will steal your stuff at the Crescent Hotel. We've had a couple of incidents there where stuff has gone missing and just...
I'm curious about that. What other sort of physical interactions happen? Have you ever encountered any sort of poltergeist activity?
Well, I don't know that it was poltergeist because they get kind of crazy from what I understand. But like that one time we were in Jefferson at... Heather's house.
Oh yeah, and that truck fell off.
There's a shelf, and it had like one of those little metal trucks on it. And we were getting ready to go to bed, and we had been investigating there quite a bit. Matter of fact, that was when we were helping out with the History, Haunts, and Legends. And so we were hosting at that particular location.
Now, what is that, a TV show? Or?
No. In Jefferson, Texas, twice a year, they have History, Haunts, and Legends.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And
it's sort of a tour kind of thing.
Yeah, and they have like five or six different locations, and then they have paranormal teams that will host each location, and then the people will come through every 30, 45 minutes, and you can investigate with them. And anyway, so we were getting ready to go to bed, and all of a sudden that truck just flies off that shelf. I mean, it'd been sitting there all day, no problem. And then it just...
Who knows how long.
Right. And so we've had a lot of stuff like that happen where just all of a sudden something just, you know, falls or, you know, things like that.
I've heard doors slam a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seems to be something that happens quite often.
Have you investigated any of the sort of historic sites around here in Texarkana, say the Hotel Grimm or the Perot Theater?
That is on our wish list, actually. We would love to be able to do that.
Rose Hill Cemetery.
We've investigated.
Yeah, we did do that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we helped out a little bit with the Texarkana Ghost Walk.
Oh, right.
And so we were in the Union Station one time. The only problem is when you have big groups, you rarely are going to have interaction.
Yeah, I can imagine safety is a concern, too, in some of these old places. You know, everybody tripping.
The Union Station, it seemed like it had some activity.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was very active at one time.
Yeah. But, yeah, we have found that when it's just a small group of folks, you're more likely going to get some evidence rather than a whole bunch of people. First of all, you know, with everybody talking and moving around and stuff, it's hard to pick up stuff. You don't know the difference between, you know, is that just somebody talking or is it an EVP, you know.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of control the environment to get good evidence.
What is something that people misunderstand about all this, or that something that's in movies or TV that's not right?
Well, other than like what I said earlier, you know, people just automatically think it's something bad.
Oh, right.
You know,
right.
And so a lot of people that don't believe in it, I think really it's just that they're afraid to believe in it.
Oh, right.
It's a fear or whatever. But, I mean, if you believe in the soul, I mean, I don't understand how it can be difficult to believe that there are, you know, spirits among us.
Yeah. What's Halloween like for you guys? Are you doing anything special? Or is there any extra activity on Halloween that people say the veil between here and there thins and all that kind of stuff?
We always have fun on Halloween.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we spend the whole month kind of doing stuff. But, I don't know, I give out candy on Halloween night. That's what I do on Halloween. There
you go. Leave a little extra for the spirits.
Yeah. I mean, when I started this, I did it for fun. I was honestly a little skeptical at first. And then I got into it, and I just became addicted to it. It's like, once you see it and you start having experiences, you can't help but believe.
Right.
Yeah, and I think most people that are skeptical, they just haven't had anything happen to them. Because you can hear people say things that they've seen or they've done. But until you have something happen to you, I think that's really the turning point for some people.
Yeah.
But then there's some people that are just in denial because they're fearful.
Right. What's your advice for people who think they may be experiencing something in their home or workplace?
Well, I guess it depends on what it is they're experiencing. If it's not anything, you know, negative, it's just like, you know,
ignore it and go on.
Yeah.
Just ignore it.
And I've heard that if you just ask things to leave, that might help too. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything in my house that I know of.
Right.
I mean, but nothing that I would say, you know, I would want to have to kick out of my house anyway. But I mean, I feel like I do sometimes have visitors, you know, past like relatives or whatever.
Okay.
And you know, some evidence from that, but not anything that is just okay. It's living with me that I would need to kick out. So I really don't know if that works or not.
Right.
Just asking them to leave.
And my aunt, she had one in her house, and it wasn't anybody bad. It was just something that was irritating her.
Oh, right.
And so she finally just got on to them and told them, get out, you know, just kept telling them that.
Yeah.
And she quit having the experiences. So I don't know. I think it seems like some of them were almost like children, or like they're like trying to get kind of be
attention.
Naughty.
Right, push boundaries, yeah.
Yeah, like they're bored and they're just trying to mess with you.
Right. We're about out of time. Where can people find out more about you guys? I know you have a Facebook page.
We do have a Facebook page, The Inspectors, and it's spelled a little different than the actual word inspectors because some people don't realize that the term specter is another word for spirit. So,
right.
But it's Inspectors Paranormal, and we also have a TikTok account. So we've got a lot of our evidence on both of those.
Okay, great.
So if they want to check it out, lots of videos.
I'll put links in the show notes for this episode, okay. So people can
awesome.
Take a look.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks so much for sharing a little bit about what you guys do, yeah. And happy Halloween.
Thank you.
Happy Halloween.
Thanks for having us.
Sure.
On the Line is a Texarkana Gazette podcast recorded in Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. Follow On the Line on our website, texarkanagazette.com/podcast. To support the show, post a positive review wherever you get your podcasts. And please, spread the word by sharing a link or telling a friend. I write, produce, and edit the show, and I'd love to hear from you. Email me at krichter@texarkanagazette.com and let me know what you think. I write, produce, and edit the show, and I'd love to hear from you. Email me at krichter@texarkanagazette.com and let me know what you think. I'll see you next time on the line.